time now for our weekly chat with the experts at ETF.com, the world's leading independent authority on ETFs.
People have been saying there are too many mutual funds since the 80s. For all the talk of smart beta, they haven't pulled in huge assets. The active managers are showing up in the ETF space.
Dave, you heard us talking returns there and Jason's question on flows. So let's maybe start with that, start with flows. I know there's been a lot of money going into shorter-term bond ETFs in particular. So what does that look like, and what else have you been seeing?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. For the whole year, we've seen flows into really very short-term funds, like iShares Short Treasury Bond ETF has pulled in something like $10 billion over the course of this year. Their 1 to 3 year treasury fund has pulled in six. These have become sort of top 10 asset gatherers in a year where the other thing people have been doing with their money is actually putting on a lot of risk. Things like IEFA, which is, you know, the, you know, Europe Asia Far East fund, those are the other big winners. So it's sort of an interesting barbell in investor sentiment where on the fixed income side, people seem to be looking at safety plays, this very short-term end of the spectrum. But in the equity space, they're taking risk.
Yeah, you mentioned the safety play. When you look at short-term bonds, do you think it's really that simple? I guess that and then just a combination of rising rates making these holdings more attractive?
Well, yeah, and certainly, you know, you mentioned the flattening and now potentially inverting yield curve. You know, if you don't have to invest 10, 15 years out to get a decent yield, why would you, right? Why would you take that extra duration risk, particularly when we are in a rising rate environment? You mentioned some of the negative returns we've seen in things like TLT, you know, a 20-year bond fund down 7% on the year. That's a direct result of rising interest rates. Being on the short end of the curve helps protect you from some of that.
All right, so you brought up this yield curve inversion. we didn't. Actually, we did before you did. What do you make of that? Because if you look historically, an inverted yield curve has preceded a recession, going back to like every time going back to like 1940, 1950. So what do you make of that? Is that something that you're concerned about?
Yeah, I think it's legit, right? Anytime there is a sort of, you know, a comparative stat like that where the inverted yield curve precedes a recession, which really has never been very wrong. We had a little bit of a hiccup there in maybe 2007 where maybe it flashed early. But it is legit to look at that and say, is this a sign that investor sentiment about the long-term prospects for the economy are really, really negative? That's what the traditional analysis of an inverted yield curve would say. The counter to that is there are a lot of institutional buyers in the world now that effectively have to buy certain dated treasury bonds. For instance, they have to always maintain a 10-year portfolio. If you're an insurance company and you're doing liability matching, things like that, and that sort of creates this endless bid to buy those securities when they come up for auction, that drives down their yield, and that's part of what creates this sort of weird market where some of the shorter-term paper, the stuff that's sort of 1 to 3 year, which tends not to be attractive to a big insurance company or a big pension fund, which is doing long-term asset liability matching, that's part of what creates this too. So whether this is a structural issue or whether this is that traditional economic sentiment indicator, I think remains to be seen, but it's worth being cautious.
Dave, something else I've noticed, if you look at shorter-term bond ETFs that are taking in money, a lot of them seem to be actively managed. If you look at ETFs like Mint, JPST, NEAR, is this a space where you think active managers can add some value?
I actually would sort of invert that and say I think it's a very difficult space to index, and I think that's really what you're seeing here. Most of the quote-unquote active management down here at the short end of the curve isn't sort of shoot-from-the-hip security selection. You know, I'm going to get this overnight paper and I'm going to buy that for, you know, 4 months due junk bond. It's actually managing a fairly tight mandate with pretty strict guardrails around things like credit exposure, about target duration and target maturity. And so I think active management is as much anything a matter of convenience and a recognition that it can be quite difficult to index this edge of the space.
You were talking about what institutional investors may be buying on the fixed income side, and if you look at the longer end of the curve, and this is actually a question we get quite a bit, but I'd love to hear your opinion on this. Is there any scenario where you think it makes sense to lend your money to the government for 30 years at 3.3%? because that just doesn't seem like a very compelling value proposition right now.
Well, especially when you're, you know, what, two and a quarter for doing it for a year.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't make much sense at all, I think, for most investors, particularly in a market with rising rates, right? I mean, that's, you know, that 7% sort of punch in the face that the long-term bond investor took this year, that could happen again quite easily if we are in this continued rising rate environment. I mean, the bond market is pretty inexorable in its being driven by math. There's only so much investor sentiment can do to overcome the raw math of bond investing.
We're visiting with ETF.com's Dave Nottig. Dave, let's pivot and maybe talk corporate bonds. And something that seems to be getting a lot of attention right now is this increase in triple B rated corporate debt. So for our listeners, this is the lowest quality investment grade rating. It's just above junk bonds. And sort of the narrative out there is that if we had a recession or some sort of an economic blip, or I think even if rates just kept rising, which could make this debt more difficult to service, we could end up seeing a lot of downgrades in this space. And that in turn could spark a sell-off because there'd be too much junk debt supply out there, right? And so going back to institutions, some of them simply can't hold junk bonds, and so they would be forced sellers. ETFs tracking investment-grade debt, they would be forced to sell. Any thoughts on this? Do you see this as an issue?
Well, I think it's mostly an opportunity for investors. I'm actually a big fan of quote-unquote fallen angel strategies. One fund in particular, ANGL from VanEck, that was sort of first to market with this strategy, and that is explicitly targeting those bonds that just slip below investment grade. As you pointed out, when a bond falls below investment grade, there's a whole bunch of folks out there that have to sell. They don't have a choice. That tends to put these things into oversold category. They tend to put out yields. They tend to have yields that are available that really are not representative of any increase in their probability of default. You know, if you look at how the probability of default works in bonds, it's not like you go from, you know, triple B to double B and all of a sudden you went from a, you know, 1 in 10 chance of default to a 90% chance of default. It's much, much more gradual than that. And in fact, you know, the vast majority of defaults, 70% of defaults happen at triple C and below, way down at the bottom of the junk curve. So I think people do get a little bit nervous about that that probability of default to an excess. So I think if you're looking at that triple B space, I'd actually be looking at those fallen angel strategies. There are a couple of great funds that do that now.
Dave, I want you to put on your tinfoil hat. I've got a conspiracy theory for you. with this mountain of triple B debt, you know, you hear all kinds of things. Of course, everything on the internet's true, right? Is there any possibility that some of these rating agencies could be under pressure, political or otherwise, to maintain the status quo to avoid some sort of forced sell-off? Or on the other hand, after 2008, where they were taken to the woodshed for not doing their job, they don't care. They're going to do what they want to do. Any truth to any of that or any thoughts?
Yeah, I tend to think the best of people as a default, and I don't think that there are people in back rooms smoking cigars deciding to manipulate the ratings for the benefit of the market. I tend to dismiss that out of hand. Now, I could be wrong. Stranger things certainly have happened in finance. But for the most part, I think it's smart to take ratings with a grain of salt, for sure. But I don't think we're in the midst of some vast conspiracy to manipulate the ratings in order to support the market.
Now, to Jason's point, though, I have read quite a bit that perhaps the ratings agencies are being too conservative after the issues they had in 2008, right? They're sort of sandbagging on the ratings. Dave, I want to go back. You were mentioning fallen angels. And I know I asked you earlier about active management in the shorter term or ultra short bond ETF space. So I think I know how you're going to answer this question. But what about in the corporate bond space, right? If you have an active manager who can maybe add some value by helping avoid, I don't know, quote unquote fallen angels, or potentially picking out the quote unquote rising stars, the bonds that may see ratings upgrades, is there a case for active management here at all?
Well, you know, that has certainly been a story that people have told, that sort of smart bond pickers can find those gems that are in fact very safe but have very high yields and can sort of subvert the work of the rating agencies and be better at it than the raw indexers. It's an attractive story. Unfortunately, the math hasn't borne that out, right? The number of windows in which active corporate and junk bond managers have outperformed naive indexes is actually very small. Like every once in a while, there'll be a quarter where they do it, but for the most part, you know, year in, year out, indexing still works in this space.
Well, and I have to point out, as smart as I like to think we all are, you much more than we, if we're all talking about this here on the program today, then everybody already knows about it, right? So the market's pretty good at pricing this stuff in.
Exactly.
All right, Dave, lastly, I wanted to ask you about leveraged loans. So an ETF like BKLN, the Invesco Senior Loan ETF. And for listeners unfamiliar with leveraged loans, these are floating rate bank loans made to riskier companies. But Dave, there's some talk out there about a quote-unquote ETF death spiral. So this would be where, I guess, redemptions in the ETF create selling in the underlying market, and you get sort of this negative feedback loop where supposedly the end result is the ETF blows up. And I think there are some who even question whether bank loans should be wrapped in an ETF to begin with. What's your take on all this?
So, you know, I don't think there's a death spiral, but I think it's important to point out that ETFs don't magically create liquidity for illiquid securities. They can give you access to securities that might otherwise be very difficult to access, but it doesn't create more buyers and sellers in a time of crisis. Bank loan ETFs, invest, most of their assets sort of at the B rating, double B rating and below. That's a very small part of the market. It's generally under 1% of all the bonds in the market have that kind of garbagey rating. And so you're talking about already a very small pool of potential securities. And, you know, in a world where we did see a rash of defaults at that end of the spectrum, where we did see a rash of selling, there's no guarantee there are going to be buyers there. Now, I think the ETF will simply come along for the ride, right? If there's a rout in triple C rated bank loans, that's going to hurt anybody who owns them. I think the important thing is for investors to recognize this is a very risky segment of the market. And yeah, you know, the spread versus, say, the treasury market over the last year between bank loans and that has been 4 or 5%. That's great, but recognize that every time the rates go up on these floating rate bonds, they actually get riskier. They get harder for the companies that have issued those notes to repay. So you look at the big holdings there, like a Burger King or a Caesars Resort, who tend to feature prominently there. Their financial situation actually gets worse as interest rates go up.
Dave, we have about 2 minutes left here. How do we kill this narrative, this ETF death spiral narrative? So whether we're talking leveraged loans, of course, it's been said for years in the high yield space, even if we're talking about this triple B rated corporate debt and the impact that may have and the role ETFs play. Do you think it's just a lack of education out there? Because a lot of the people pushing this narrative seem to be really smart people, hedge fund managers, other people involved in the space. How do we kill this?
Well, I think it's just a matter of understanding sort of what these funds do and what they don't do. I think we look back at some of the failures we've seen in the mutual fund space, Third Avenue, a few years ago, which did get caught in a death spiral because they had redemptions that forced them to sell their most liquid securities, leaving them with a worse and worse portfolio. That doesn't happen in ETFs. It really doesn't happen in indexed ETF like something like BKLN. Even if everybody ran for the door in BKLN, it's going to track its index. It's going to liquidate a pro rata slice of all the things it needs to sell. Yes, if everybody's selling, those will go down, but they're not going to be exacerbating it through some sort of structural damage.
Dave, always excellent perspective. We'll have to leave it there. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That was ETF.com's Dave Nottig.